Chapter XXI. Our love to you again, brothers and sisters. It has suddenly occurred to me that I left you standing in one of the healing wards of our city of Azure while I have spent some time in a somewhat lengthy discourse. Yet if it seemed lengthy to you, may I say that I have touched upon a few of the more vital factors which relate to your very immediate future. By now you may be thinking that we here on Venus do nothing but heal the sick who have departed from your earth plane or to otherwise help them adjust themselves to their new spiritual home. This is not true. We have another very important element of work which may be more to your liking. But in order to visualize its nature, we will again seek out another one of the great and mysterious rooms which compose this city. Now let us enter into a room which is somewhat different from the two previously visited. As we step through the doorway, you see, and I believe you are quite surprised at what apparently looks like a large number of your Earthmen and women, each sitting at what very obviously is a desk which is faintly familiar and reminiscent of your school days. There are, of course, outstanding differences, such as the dome-shaped crystalline roof structures which you have become familiar with, which seem to fill the room with some particularly bright shades of green. The desk-like furniture is also different from the old dark mahogany wood structures in your school, inasmuch as they, too, are made of some brightly glowing crystalline material. These people, too, are somewhat vaguely different from the earth people whom you see about you every day, inasmuch as they seem to have a sort of transparency in that they assume or absorb somewhat the radiance which fills the room. Yes, these are people from the earth. They are the psychic bodies, the astral psychic selves, of real-life earth people whose physical bodies are at this very moment in their respective homes, sound asleep. These people are, at the moment, as you see them before you, being taught some of the more spiritual ways of life. In fact, many of the things which you have been shown, and which we have discussed, are being firmly implanted. In a few hours they will return to their respective bodies, and in the morning when they awaken they will not remember, consciously, where they have been during the night time. I may say, however, that in the following days of their earth life, they may wonder at some seemingly strange things that happen to them which they cannot otherwise explain, which may be actually some of the truth or personal directions given in these night classes on Venus. They may accidentally, as it were, pick up a certain book in some lending library, or in a nearby shop, and in thumbing through the pages run across a paragraph which seems to open up a whole new world of thinking. They may accidentally meet some long-lost friend, who may start some chain of circumstances which shall also seem to cause some strange and incredible happening, but whatever the way, such circumstance seems to unlock a certain door which opens up a new world and with it a succession of spiritual demonstrations. This chain was actually started and directed by what they had learned in these night classes. You, yourself, and Sister Ruth have attended these classes. It might be said that Sister Ruth at one time almost lost herself in a series, or succession, of such classes which lasted about 2 weeks. When I say lost, I do not mean to imply that she was in a dangerous position, but she did suffer a great deal of physical difficulty with some seeming lack of coordination. She must remember, however, she was actually directing her body through her umbilical cord from the classroom to her earth body. Such a connection, which is sometimes called the silver cord, is always maintained by an individual who so temporarily separates himself in a dimensional way from his physical body. In case there are those who are reading these lines who might think this rather incredible, I could recite numerous examples from your Bible and other historical works, or even cite true cases, in your own time, in which the persons involved had a complete and conscious happening of such astral flights. Many of the great inventions, works of art, poetry, political leadership, or outstanding spiritual work are always related to people who are sufficiently advanced in their evolution that they take such astral flights into classrooms such as this, during their periods of sleep or meditation. Sir Isaac Newton often sat for hours while his mind was in a far-off place, being taught the higher principles of calculus, and when he returned to his consciousness would proceed to rush madly to write it all down. Thomas Edison had a cot in his laboratory where, at almost hourly intervals, he would lie down for a short nap, and in such sleep state would ascend into some far-off classroom or laboratory where he would find the next step or the solution to a new invention. As I have said, I could cite numerous examples, but if you are curious, you can consult the autobiographies of great men and women who have left something to posterity for their fellow men. They always have some particular way of sleep or meditation for such astral or spiritual flights into such domains, either here on Venus or on the countless places of learning in some of the other higher astral planes which were most suitable for their purpose. You will always find in a close scrutiny of the lives of any truly great persons that all have found in their own way the key to their personal communion. Some may say that they are inspired purely from the cosmic God, and this is quite true, for the infinite God within you is always the causation for your best and noblest acts. Such personal relationship with God is always responsible for the greatest expressions, the most unselfish acts, the soft kindness of one man to another. But there is a definite relationship of this God with every mind in the universe, and of any other universes or dimensions. The God within you will cause you to seek out the way which is most suited for the expression of himself toward your fellow man. And while this may be a large or small expression of himself toward your fellow man, yet each one is an important part of your life. This God will also cause you to seek out others who may be more advanced in their evolution, that you may gain new knowledge of expression in Godship through this spiritual companionship. In this there are no separations, for your physical world is only an outward expression for your true self. And in the countless evolutions which are before you, you will seek out newer and better ways of communion and expression. Yes, we here on Venus are a part of a vast network of spiritual planets, or planes if you would call them such, who are engaged, not only in the salvage and therapy of human wreckage, but actively participate in teaching untold thousands from the lower earth planes, and while this number is small, yet each day the numbers are increasing, for may I say that, to your own earth, this is the time of a new awakening. It is the beginning of the seventh day of the Lord as it is quoted in your Bible. It is the ending time of all the old prophecies and their fulfillments. It will be the time of ending for the cold wars and the spiritual distresses of the nations of your earth, and while these changes may take place slowly, yet surely they must come to pass, for the hourglass of a new world has been reversed and the sands have already begun to trickle through. In your future days, dear friends, it may be the seemingly unexplained happening or coincidence which will lead you into the spiritual pathway, or it may be that suddenly even more of the great abundance of spiritual blessings are suddenly added to you. Then you may be quite sure that you are, unnoticed by yourself, attending some spiritual classroom, and while you may not have the conscious memory of having done so, yet surely you will find that in manifesting the new way or the new abundance that you have been given proof of such attendance. And so for the moment, and for the coming hours, may I see you sometime here on Venus. Brother Malvar. Chapter XXII. A pleasant day to you, brother and sister. I see that you are still standing in the classroom which we visited on our previous occasion, and as there are still many important questions in your mind, we will also, likewise, in answering your questions, anticipate those of your fellow Earthmen. You may have thought it odd that you found this group of Earth people sitting at their desks, which were quite clearly molded after the pattern of the desks which were used by these people as youngsters. Aside from being utilitarian, the main purpose was that learning and being taught here on Venus would fill in some very obvious gaps in their previous scholastic education. Your Earth system of education reminds me somewhat of a great sieve where the youngsters are pressed through and all emerge exactly the same size and shape. I am using this as the mental metaphor. There is a singular lack of proper education in the spiritual concepts. I do not mean the kind which are associated with parochial schools, nor of any such theologies, which are more or less orthodox. And while these religious concepts seem to fill the need for some sort of Sunday activities, such inspirational values as are thus incurred, are quickly lost in the shuffle on Monday. There is also a singular lack of recognizing the individual propensities of each child. While there has been some vague attempts to individualize the child, there has not yet been a constructive idea or movement to properly institute a spiritual educational system which can be combined with their other scholastic activities. Neither will there be any attempts, until such further day when the various sects and denominations quit quarreling among themselves long enough to form such a spiritual combination. I might say this also would not contain the unrealistic and confusing elements which are contained in the expression of many of the denominations and sects. Such a program would have to be instituted and moralized by an entirely new age concept, new at least to many of those who would have to support it, while their sons and daughters were being educated. We, who have been on the path for a long time, know these truths and principles. The other factor in individualizing a child's educational program is only crudely recognized by letting the child wander around the classroom, swishing his hands in paint or pinching a piece of modeling clay into some shapeless form. It is theorized that a child should seek out, in such a free expression, his latent talents. However, only an old soul in a child's body could thus individualize his own strongest personalized traits. With the average child, these traits are too submerged and interwoven with lesser traits which, when compiled together from such outside stimuli as curiosity in his new world, will often cause a child to seek out some rather strange and unrelated or even abortive expressions. No serious attempt is really made to direct his life expression, or a vocational guidance until he reaches the last few years of his education. By that time he will have formed very strong and very definite thought patterns and philosophies. Under such conditions he has not the proper perspective to relate himself to his true purpose. He will often wander the world and his eyes filled with the glamour of fame and easy money which he thinks could be his through some field of endeavor to which he is entirely unsuited. He quite often goes through life in the pursuance of these false objectives and thus comes to the end of his days unsuccessful, bitter, and frustrated. In escaping his physical body he may, after several reincarnations, find himself entering one of the great colleges or universities in one of the more highly evolved astral planets. There he will complete his education and his specialized training, which will later on permit him to again appear on the earth and in his true expression. He thus becomes the great artist or poet or scientist. And in bringing to a full conclusion his rightful expression, he will have dissipated the heavy load of karma. It is easy to see that a more logical course to pursue would be one in which the educational factors were included in each child's life, which would enable him to at least start, if not fully become, whatever it was that his cosmic mind had conceived him to be. It would only be necessary to make an accurate diagnosis of each child's potentialities and then institutionalize him through his educational period in what he was best adapted to do. This is being done on countless other planets, such as the one with which you are more familiar in your own solar system and who you call Mars. It is quite obvious, after a bit of careful thought, that your Earth plane would soon be a new place with a new way of life, if such a program were fully exploited, and it would save many people many needless reincarnations and thousands of years of time in gaining their rightful expression. Our educational system here on Venus is not confined to teaching small groups in such capacities as would first start them on their right pathway. The people in this room are learning certain things which will be fitted in the proper place in their Earth life, so that by utilizing this knowledge in their future days, there will be no obvious deficiency of which they might be vaguely aware if this placing is not done. Even the desks fit in with the scene. In this city there are many other classrooms as well as a number of auditoriums, all of which have functional purposes of serving the needs of different groups or intellectual strata of the lower orders of Earth planets. Many of the higher masters often come and give lectures and demonstrations in these auditoriums, which are partially attended by numbers of Earth people. These, of course, are the more highly advanced people which are serving the Earth humanity in some great capacity. These classes have been attended many times by people like Sister Kenny, Florence Nightingale, Mr. and Mrs. Curie, Cook, Pasteur, Beethoven, in fact, I could name hundreds, who come from all of the professions who are connected with the service of humanity. Many great blessings in the form of inventions or discoveries are thus given to the Earth people, which has been partially made possible by attendance in these classrooms and lecture halls. In the course of evolution, an individual in progressing upward often attain outstanding scholastic achievements in one of the very highest astral planets and will quite naturally be interested in seeking an outlet for his best expression. He will be infused with the glow of service to his fellow men. He will then reincarnate and emerge in a physical form in some lower Earth order. Very often, however, the circumstances are such that on finding himself in low order vibrations, he will be unable to express the purpose for which he came. In the seething unrest of his mind, he will send out thoughts for help which are intercepted by some of the spiritual entities with whom he is associated and who are working for his good, and in the interception of his plea for help he can be led into a Venusian classroom where the necessary lacking ingredients of knowledge are placed in his psychic mind. Thus, when he awakens in the following days, after these sleep time courses, he will begin to find the way and means to bring into full expression the purpose of his Earth life. The Earth scientist or doctor is trying to visualize that the seat of thought and concept lies within the gray mass you call brain. This is a badly mistaken fallacy. The brain is only an outward expression or coordinator of the innumerable life experiences of each individual which are reflected into it from the psychic mind. It is also said quite truly that the average Earth person very seldom, if ever, in his Earth life reaches a point where he can think constructively. When I say constructively, I mean that he cannot voluntarily construct an idea or purpose without the association of his countless experiences contained in his thought patterns which are reflected from the psychic self. Any constructive thought must come through the psychic self from the superconsciousness. The superconscious is the part of each individual which, being connected to the fountainhead, is the all-seeing, all-knowing, all-anticipating intelligence, which sometimes trickles through the mesh of the psychic self in tiny droplets. Such droplets always are the originating sources of man's greatest constructive intelligence and inspiration. Now the time for rest has arrived, so I will leave you for the coming hours. May you enjoy your Earth life. Malvar. Chapter XXIII. Greetings, brother and sister. In going through my previous transmissions, I have found that, while I have covered many subjects, I have not yet discussed government and leadership of the nations of the world. And while we here in this city of Azure do not relate ourselves in our service to you in this capacity, yet it was deemed essential that this very important topic should be discussed. Throughout the ancient and modern civilizations which have existed on your planet, and these have been many and varied, yet in a broad sense they have all had many common basic elements and flaws. The theory of government is based on a natural desire of the many communities, states, and peoples existing as a nation to factually integrate their many diversified ways of life into a harmonious combination with a peaceful expression of their life, as best suits their needs. I am speaking, of course, of such forms of government as you call democratic, socialistic, or communistic. In the latter form, I am not referring to that great country across the sea which calls itself communistic, but which is really totalitarian. I am referring to the pure and basic concept of government by the people. Even in the past, history shows that while some governments were ruled by monarchs or emperors, they too existed as a byproduct of the people's will. Because the nations and peoples of your world, as well as of other similar planets, have not conceived a way of life motivated by the divinity of concept which is contained in the Golden Rule, restricting measures are necessarily imposed by the proper functions of law bodies to properly enforce such restrictions. The peoples of your Earth planet have not yet devised a perfect form of government. Nor will they do so until spiritual orders of concept are entered into. Many of your political leaders are motivated and sustained by high moral standards. However, due to the reactionary way of life of most of the people, the leaders too must participate in such reactionary policies. This is one more example of the many kinds of treadmills the Earth people get themselves into by dealing only with the materialistic side of their lives. They have not yet learned of a united and concerted spiritual effort of thought and action which would quickly dissipate the fear of war and political unrest. We here on Venus do not sanction the use of the Table of Peace where the nations of the world are assembled as a place for strife and bickering. We do not condone the holding of the quill, which is plucked from the Dove of Peace, in your right hand while your left hand passes out the implements of war. Nor is any nation less guilty. While you are thus employed in scheming and devising ways to use your ideas and your philosophies of life in your peace treaties, your armies are shooting down the soldiers of another army, which is likewise employed in scheming and contriving to force another idea of peace into your way of life. Such fallacious attitudes of peace have bred new and innumerable wars, killed millions of peoples and decimated many nations. Thousands of such treaties have been written, and even as they were signed, the signers were contriving new aggressions in their minds. You have in the last years, and I am speaking to the nations of the world, capped a fearful climax onto the greatest catastrophe which has ever happened in the history of your Earth planet. After years of bestial bloody war, a new and terrible misuse of God's power was exploded into the world. In a few days, about 1.5 million souls were blasted from the earth, or rendered helpless, while millions more were left homeless and in fear and trembling by this awful thing. Now must all the people of the world walk this path of fear. You know not the day or hour when your world will topple down upon you. And even now you are in fear and trembling from the awful atomic weapons, yet you are devising new and more terrible ones. Surely this mad and awful race leads but to one place, oblivion. We in the upper worlds cannot use strong enough language in our warnings, nor do you know the even more drastic effects which atomic explosions, whether thermonuclear or otherwise, have in some of the astral worlds. If you could but catch one small glimpse into these great unseen worlds about you which you call dimensions and see your relationship to them, and how these atomic explosions were letting loose fearful energies which are breaking down and destroying many of the natural protective barriers between you and some of the great astral fields of negativity. If the leaders of the nations could see these things, they would soon convert atomic devices into more useful purposes or quickly render them useless. We in our position, working with all other spiritual planes, are doing our utmost to influence your leaders into more constructive efforts at making lasting peace. As of today, and this hour, there is a glimmering hope. The leaders of your America and of the great nations across the sea have been making a united and concerted effort to make this peace factual. The history of the next few years will determine whether you are successful or whether your Earth planet will become a blackened, decimated cinder. It might be well for the people of each nation, individually and collectively, to band together and put their last ounce of will and constructive prayer into crystallizing the efforts of your leaders. You in America are fortunate, at this critical time, to have genuinely inspired and motivated leadership. May I also add that the past leaders of your great nation are also behind this concerted movement for peace, and should you succeed, your efforts shall richly reward you. For then it shall be that your nation shall enter into, along with the other nations of your world, a way of life which has been called the Aquarian Age, an age in which God truly rules the world through the infinitely inspired leadership of Him who you call Christ. For this time, peace be with you. Malvar. Chapter XXIV. A pleasant holy day to you, brother and sister. I will attempt to discuss in this transmission two basic and fundamental instincts of creation which have been implanted in the life expression of every living creature on your Earth and other similar planets. These two instincts are self-preservation and sex. It is obvious, with a moment's thought, that I could devote a whole volume to each instinct. It is these instincts which often, in a perverted relationship, cause mankind his greatest sorrows, likewise in a normal relationship his most joyous and useful expressions. Many species of plant, insect, and animal life exhibit strong and normal relationships with these subconscious motivating factors. The will to live and the desire to procreate are the basic elements which make life possible for all living things to survive and multiply. The tiny ant or the honey bee are familiar to you all. Likewise are the squirrels. They and many other creatures spend many hours in carefully storing a food supply against the time when there is no natural source. However, these creatures seldom, if ever, die of conditions such as heart failure, stomach ulcers, hardening of the arteries and other diseases which man inflicts upon himself in his perverted anxiety and fear for his security. While these two instincts are distinct and separate, yet they are closely interwoven and are always found in close relationship. It is these perverted instincts by which man has created for himself a treadmill-like existence. Do you remember the pictures of the ancient treadmills where a poor slave was forced to mount an endless chain of steps? This chain of steps was so geared that by its movement it would grind corn or pump water. Often the slave was forced to activate this machine until he dropped dead. In your modern civilization, this same condition literally exists for untold millions of people. The great masses of the population have created a highly competitive way of life, and so each man goes about trying to wrest from his fellow man the necessities of life. He has found it necessary to contrive new and more cunning ways to bring these necessities to him. So with each passing hour, more and more cleverly contrived ways are brought into existence to further exploit his fellow men. Nearly all Earth people have some vague notion that their material possessions and wealth are their security. Many persons thus acquire a perverted relationship, and thus it is they may amass huge fortunes which, of course, do them no good at all. While they are reveling in their false sense of power and security, they are also stricken with the pangs of inner conscience. It is the still small voice that points the finger of guilt. And so they seek to placate themselves by giving away portions of their superfluous wealth to various charities or foundations, or they may at the time of separation endow almost all of this wealth to such purposes, and while this is a good and noble thing in itself, yet always does this type of donor seek in his false sense of security to perpetuate himself forever in the minds of his countrymen, for with each gift goes his name which is firmly attached. He erects huge buildings which are called by his name, or he may create monuments of stone with his image engraved thereon, thinking that he will thus feel more secure. It is quite obvious that mankind needs a new and stronger spiritual concept to supplant this useless, unintelligent waste of life. It can be truly said that this sense of insecurity often directly has caused wars. A moment's thought on your part will bring to mind a great number of possibilities. Of course, there are many millions of your countrymen who have a more normal relationship. They try in their own way to adapt their life so that it will not entail too many of the superfluities. They also try to develop the spiritual nature within themselves. However, here again is the lack of constructive knowledge coupled with the inescapable pattern of your civilization. Thus they also have become slaves. It can also be said that the female of your species appears to be more cunning than the male. It is usually the male who breaks himself down on this treadmill years before his natural conclusion. He has contrived a vast array of chemical substances and adornments whereby the female decorates her person to further superimpose the false aura of glamour which is strongly attached to the sex instinct. And here again is a strange paradox. The males are continually creating new conveniences for their females, while they in turn find more leisure time to devote to their persons. Their homes are an array of mechanical, electrical, and chemical conveniences. And so with the ever-increasing exploitation and creation practiced by the male, he finds himself led farther and farther away from a true course in life. He has even invented a great system of laws and enforcement agencies which are designed primarily to circumvent his fellow men from doing things which would be more clever than he. So he has thus created a comparatively large group of people who indulge in malpractice which is considered criminal. In this he has found ways to circumvent the other laws which have inspired his criminal malpractice. You know of these things and call them by such names as gambling, horse racing, sexual prostitution, various rackets which are sometimes interwoven with your politics. In getting into these things even I would get confused. It is small wonder that your world is in such a state of affairs. I will not attempt to go farther into this all-important factor or instinct of self-preservation. However, I would like to touch more directly upon the instinct of sex. Here again, animals and insects often express a more normal relationship than man, while it is said that man has a higher degree of intelligence. Yet he seems completely ignorant of the more advanced psychic relationships of sex. He may know of the biological and some of the psychological aspects, but seldom, if ever, does he connect himself with his many life relationships in past reincarnations. Thus in his seeking a mate he usually follows the same pattern which is exhibited by the lower orders of animals. He or she will move around in their particular society until they meet one of the opposite gender who seems to stimulate their physical reactions more than anyone heretofore previously encountered. This seems to be the motivating factor in marriage. The very high divorce rate, which in some sections is almost 1-to-1, shows how fallacious this reactionary and illogical type of marriage can be. There are of course many other factors which may enter into such divorce actions. The whole of your civilization is quite conducive to all types of abnormal separations. They are all lumped together and found in the false superstructure which has been erected in lieu of a more basic spiritual concept. Very often two people who marry may have formerly been mother and son, or father and daughter, or they may have been any one of a number of combinations of such family relationships, or they may even marry from a psychic sense of guilt that they have wronged the other in some previous life. To reflect a moment's thought into the possibilities of these factors, you will begin to see how little the earth man knows of himself. Likewise, you mothers who bear children. The child who comes into your womb is not created by you. You only grow the body. He has found, through you, the doorway back into the world which may have been his home for many lifetimes. He has been attracted to you, in most cases, because of certain harmonic frequency relationships. To those who have knowledge of genetics and believe that a child's propensities are contained in the chromosomatic structure at the time of his conception, may I say that this may be partially or even wholly true as far as the physical body is concerned. A child may borrow the dark eyes and brown hair of the mother or any of the innumerable configurations of physical traits from either or both parents. Yet he does not borrow his spiritual nature, nor the things which he truly is. However, to you who are parents, may I caution you that the factors of environment with which you surround your child may do either one of two things: they may warp or distort him, or they may add to an often expressed spiritual concept which may have been the motivating cause for your child to come back into this world. So therefore be careful. Each child is a charge which has been given to you by the Creator. Yours is the responsibility of stewardship in a young and formative period of his life. He may be an old soul who has sought you out, thinking that he could find in the outlet or doorway which you have created for him, the true expression and purpose toward which he has developed through countless ages. Try to recognize in him, that he, like yourself, is an individual divine expression of God. You may not know, in this lifetime, that your husband or your wife could have been your brother or sister. Neither will you know that your son or daughter may have been mother or father, or that they could have been someone whom you severely wronged, nor should you try to do so. Your lack of clairvoyant faculties would prohibit any factual knowledge, and until you have developed such latent outlets of clairvoyant expression, let us instead pursue a more realistic policy in dealing with the various members of your household and your social structures. Yes, even your friends may have been linked to you with family ties. Let us all, therefore, treat each other as brother and sister. Let us see in each other that we are individual expressions of infinity, and let us all participate in this universal brotherhood and express our fullest measure of love. So rest in peace. Malvar. Chapter XXV. It was quite obvious that the two preceding chapters, inasmuch as they contained most of the relative values of man's physical and material expressions on his earth plane, could not be given in their entirety in two transmissions. So if you will have the patience to bear with me, so that I may point up and objectify the salient points, future generations of mankind will be able to find a much more peaceful and productive way of life. I have pointed out that while many governments were primarily instituted and conceived with righteous spiritual concepts, such concepts will go astray unless they are properly activated with the correct fundamental understanding of man's spiritual nature. Such is the case with your constitution, and the idealisms which were interjected into its construction. However, it is a mistake to believe that any man, or group of individuals, can properly execute and transmit such idealism into your way of life unless properly ordained for this purpose. There is in your government, as in many others, a distinct schism or cleavage between the spiritual expression and the way in which the government is expressed. The direction of any nation, and the expression of the people thereof, should always be so constituted as to be the function of what you might call a priesthood. Several other ancient civilizations as Atlantis, Lemuria, Egypt, and many others have, at different periods, existed under such a governmental function as was expressed in the divine spiritual concepts of the priesthood of the temple. I realize, however, that your present day would express innumerable spiritual concepts in a likewise uncounted number of temples. These are all good and a necessary spiritual function in their own relative positions. Or should I say they are much better than nothing? Yet none of the spiritual concepts which exist on your earth planet today are sufficient unto themselves to serve in a direct capacity as a spiritual government of the people. Thus it is that you have come to great strife among your nations, for you do not properly understand your relationship with your brothers and sisters about your world. Such a peaceful utopia as you have pictured for yourselves cannot and will not be resolved from such widespread differences of concept. In a future millennium, as it is called in your Bible, man will eventually unite himself into a spiritual brotherhood. He will find that all peoples and nations will function quite properly under a spiritual leadership which is motivated by the infinite principles of brotherly love. Such a government will be directed and expressed to the people from a temple in which certain individuals will appear on your earth plane, and these individuals shall be, as you call them, avatars or masters. Today each man and woman in your great nation, and so likewise in many other nations, are all sending forth a united and concerted prayer, or a plea, to the inner consciousness for a solution. And so God will thus send you one. It shall not come suddenly or with fanfare and trumpets, but only gradually as it can be assimilated and woven into the structures of everyday life. I also pointed out some factors in your sex relationship with your fellow men or women. There is at the present time a tremendous load of guilt among your people which stems from the ignorant and unrealistic attitudes toward sex relationships. It is also a seeming paradox that while man tries to live a moral and somewhat spiritual life and build within his consciousness something of a balance in his nature and purpose in your world, yet as I have said before, Such spiritual motivation often goes astray if without a knowledge of the active working principles and their proper application. In your world, sex has become a malicious and openly perverted concept. There is a tremendous exploitation of sex in almost every walk of life. The signboards and shops of your communities are crowded with displays of the almost uncovered female form, the full impact of the auto-suggestive usage of which is intended to attract the eye of the passing male. Such a practice is licentious and demoralizing. Likewise are all the fields of the entertainment world cluttered up with these auto-suggestive sex malpractice. It is a common sight in many of your large cities to see a church alongside of a rooming house which is devoted to sex perversion. If I can quote one of your earth adages, you are neither fish nor fowl. While you cry for spirituality and a release from your fears and frustrations, yet you foster and nourish practices which are open violations of such a nature that they would obstruct any spiritual help which might be poured into your earth life. We here in the spiritual realms would like a little more cooperation. Be sincere when you pray to God, and do not defeat the purpose of your prayers by indulging yourself in the negative materialistic perversions of which your world is full. This problem of sex and moral issues, which are so closely related in your everyday life, will also be solved in a gradual manner in a future day when you begin to recognize more fully the latent unexpressed clairvoyant qualities which are a part of every individual's concept. You will also begin to develop a new science of therapy which will more fully utilize these clairvoyant gifts of more highly advanced souls. You will also be able to institutionalize within your hospitals and clinics certain vital spiritual elements which you call faith healing or spiritual healing, by consciously recognizing and fostering such an attitude, which will bring into existence proper training and specialization of clairvoyance and spiritual healing. You will thus find a tremendous relief and a factual cure from the pressures of ignorance and superstition which have bred these so-called incurable diseases into your way of life. Such training and specialization, however, will also be a part of that future day, and will be a functional part of that great temple which will not only guide the political destinies of man, but shall also direct his spiritual concepts. For only in the spiritual concepts will you find the true evaluation and solution for all the ills, political, physical or otherwise, which have been so incurred, from a proper concept of spiritual wisdom. It is my purpose in the creation of this book that these many factors shall be objectively pointed out to you, and thus may it be, that what is given here today shall become part of the spiritual structures for that future age, your millennium, your Aquarius, your Utopia. Malvar. Chapter XXVI. Greetings, dear ones, and may I say first that something like congratulations are in order, as I can see that you are now viewing us in our proper relationship, and as a consequence you will be taken to the altar room where you will witness the emergence, or as you call it, birth of a person into our higher order. She is a woman whom we shall, for convenience sake, call Orda. She comes from one of the lower orders here on Venus and she has been here and studied while in a clairvoyant state, yet today she will actually be given a body such as ours so that she may resume her life here among us. Now let us cross over through the central pavilion of the temple and further down the hall we shall enter the altar room. As you can see, it is not a very large room, but it has some differences which are worth mentioning. At the far end there is a raised platform which seems to be surrounded in a semicircle by a series of crystal-like mirrors. These are about 7 feet high, in your earth measurement, and resemble something like a multi-section screen such as may be found in an earth home. Their function is to help concentrate the mind energies which will be projected by those who actively participate. Overhead in the ceiling you will notice that there are 3 large discs of crystal which are shaped somewhat like curved lenses. One is a deep blue, another is red like a ruby, and the third is a golden yellow. They are so focused that they will project a multicolored beam or matrix of energy into the area just in front of the reflecting crystal mirrors. There are also, out in front about 20 feet away, a semicircle of seven, low raised footstools which are used to kneel on. Throughout the room there is a beautiful intense radiation. The floor is also covered with something which could be called a carpet, but is actually a soft thick sheet of radiant energy, something like the more familiar ectoplasm, except that it, too, is a bright golden color. In the rear of this room are a number of benches which are sometimes partially filled by those who are closely associated with those who participate in this emergence. As there is some time yet before the ceremony takes place, let us sit quietly on one of these benches while I explain to you something more of the principles of concept and why it is possible that you are now seeing us for the first time in a true relationship. The words concept and perception, in general, may mean somewhat the same. Concept is associated in an overall sense with the eye and mind, whereas percept is usually associated with the more physical relationships. In some of our previous transmissions there were several statements which I made which are apt to be a bit confusing. I stated that as you first saw us here we would appear somewhat as you yourself appeared to others in your physical world. Later on you again saw us where we appeared to be like large glowing masses of light. If a group of people saw a thief fleeing down the street, they would later on all give a somewhat different description of the fleeing man. The principal reason for this should be more fully understood, as in understanding this principle, you will understand why the earth plane people are constantly deluding themselves. The mechanics of seeing on your physical plane are something like this. Your eye focuses through the lens the various light frequencies which are reflected by tiny light-sensitive cells mounted on the apexes of tiny rods and cones which cover the screen or retina at the rear of the eyeball. The light frequency impulses are received into the brain at the rate of about 20 per second. Your brain must then sort them in proper order with other memory impressions so that they are properly placed or conceived and related to all of your past experiences of reception. In most people the amount of synchronization varies considerably. In other words, if the eye sends faster than the brain can receive and classify, an incomplete picture is formed. Later on the mind will attempt to fill in such missing portions of the picture. This it does by taking some portions of other pictures which were received at a different time. Thus the person will vary in his description of a scene or episode from the description of the man standing next to him. Here on Venus our perception and conception is exactly reversed, in a general sense from that of your Earth people. There, as you cannot see spirit, the physical world is the most predominant, so that you view all things physically. Here we view things exactly opposite. We see all things in a spiritual world and in a spiritual way. We can, of course, just as you do, but in an advanced way, see into your physical world. You can clairvoyantly see into our spiritual world. That is why when you first saw us here you would have, of course, quite likely been able to see us partially in our, shall I say, physical bodies. And your mind would automatically fill in that which you could not see. Such a view process would happen in a similar way to any other form of man who did not have our physical appearance. Therefore he would see us physically as related to himself. You must bear in mind that what you call our physical form is an advanced spiritual form, while it does assume a shape and form which, as you now see, is quite like your own. If you remember when you first saw UT, that he appeared as a golden man. As you see us now, we are somewhat like that except that we are very radiant. We seem to be projecting from within many radiant shafts of light of brilliant intensity and many colors. Completely around us is a broad frequency band of many colors. This is the aura and is much more intense and radiant than your own. In a general, physical way we are about 6 or 7 feet tall. We do not weigh because we are not affected by the gravitational field. Looking at my face closely, you see I have a high forehead and my hair comes to my shoulders. I have two well-shaped ears, my nose is straight. I have a well-formed chin and my eyes are very large and seem to shine or glow. Over my body I seem to be wearing, as near as you can tell, a shimmering translucent tunic. In fact, my face, as I do not have a beard, seems to look like several of the earth pictures which have been drawn to resemble masters. These descriptions as I have given them to you, and as you see them, are as near as they can be put into earth language. However, remember when you come over here, in some future spiritual evolution, we may, at that time, appear somewhat different. I might mention that several earth plane people, such as I have described previously, saw us in the higher masters as intense white masses of fire. So, as I said before, concept is a matter of relativity in the position you occupy in your evolution. But now it is time for the ceremony. The benches around us have been filled as we talked, with my fellow Venusians. I will not attempt to call them to you by name, as we actually have no name here. Names are something which help to classify personality traits. Now there are seven people coming into the room in single file, being led by one of our very advanced Venusians, Shatok. Now they are taking their positions and kneeling on the small stools on the floor. There are three of the feminine gender on the left side and three masculine on the right, with the leader in the center. Now you will hear some kind of a strange music which seems to come from nowhere. The people in the semicircle have their gazes intently focused on the area just in front of the mirrors. The music now seems to be growing more intense. It would be difficult to describe these sounds, as they are actually made by energy which is being concentrated into intense beams by the minds of these seven persons. It is something like a peculiar whistling, singing, or rustling. Now you seem to see a shaft of radiant light building up in front of the mirrors. This light seems to be filled with tiny brilliant stars which are moving about and blinking in a very rapid fashion. Now gradually this radiant shaft begins to expand and grow larger. There is also an appearance of solidity which is becoming increasingly more dense. Now you are seeing a vague outline of a human form, slowly forming just as an artist might be sketching it on paper. The features of the face begin to form in their proper places. The arms and hands and fingers are also appearing. Now she is almost here. As you see, she is a very beautiful woman, and when I say beautiful, it is a spiritual beauty which surpasses any physical beauty which you may have seen. Her features are fine and well formed. Her eyes are very large, lustrous, glowing pools of light. Her hair is a tumbled mass of waves cascading over her shoulders. Her arms are slender, her fingers long and tapering. Just as we, she is clothed in a shimmering veil of light. But now the process of emergence is complete. The kneeling people stand up. The music has ceased. Orda steps down and is welcomed with loving embraces into the arms of her new parents, and her brothers and sisters. I, too, am overcome with emotion. So for now, in the excitement of welcoming our new sister, may I say, until some future time, rest in peace. Malvar. Chapter XXVII. A few hours ago you witnessed an emergence or birth of a dear sister into our plane of life. Now that she is securely placed within the arms of her loved ones, let us return to the street where you first entered, so that we may walk toward the central temple which you first saw, although not too clearly, at the time of entering. As we pass down the street you will notice now that you can see that my fellow brothers and sisters are coming and going, somewhat in the fashion of earth people. In this city there are no displays of merchandise or any other particular sights which might be seen in your earth cities. As was first described, there is a, shall I say, heavenly radiance and beauty which seems to come from out of nowhere. While the sun may appear or disappear overhead, yet there is no distinct separation of night or day, as our ability of perception does not depend on the common reflection principles associated with the physical senses. In other words, the absence of the sun makes no difference as far as our ability to see and carry on our way of life is concerned. Nor are we influenced by the regular cycles of physical depression and tiredness which induce a sleep state. On either side of this wide street are the occasional and widely separated doorways of the different dwellings, which are, as you have seen, all made of a beautiful crystalline substance. Even the paving which you walk upon is such a crystal. However, let us look at the temple which is now very close before us. As you thought previously, it does, in some respects, remind you of the earthly Taj Mahal. The basic structure, all of which is glowing white crystal, begins with a circular building of white crystal columns, each about 20 feet apart, as the building is about 500 feet in circumference. There are quite a large number of these crystal columns. The roof is a butterfly-shaped dome, similar to the shapes which are pictured as Arabian mosques. At the four different places where a street ends or points toward this temple is a small circular tower which rises to a great height, and ends in a similar dome-shaped structure. The walls and ceilings are, of course, all constructed of the white glowing crystal. Around the outside in a circular fashion is a large area which is devoted to the culture of beautiful plants and shrubbery with pleasant walks just as in your earth parks. In front of each of the four towers is a beautiful lake, the waters of which are the purest liquid crystal. Upon the surface of these lakes are many beautiful glowing water lilies, lotuses, and other aquatic plants. Around and about the shore and floating on the surface are a number of beautiful, highly resplendent waterfowl. Several of these remind you of your more familiar flamingos and swans which you have seen in your parks and zoos. Here is a convenient bench, so let us sit a while and enjoy the amazing beauty and splendor which you see about you, and while you are thus occupied I will go a little further into some of the numerous facets of your earth life evolutions. I might say before this, however, that there will be here in this temple, a ceremony in which one of our loved ones will leave our Venusian way of life to ascend closer to his ultimate mastership. If you remember the tall brother who stood in the center of the semicircle at the birth of Orda, he is the one who is about to so ascend. But we do not measure our lives here by the matter of time as you know it on earth. Rather, our lives here are measured as cycles. In fact, when you begin to understand in a more abstract manner, you will see that the infinite mind of God is always expressing himself, both finite and infinite, in the manner of cycles or evolutions, and this is true, whether it is man or beast, fish or fowl, insect or plant. It is a constant succession of an infinite number of cycles. Energy or intelligence always stems away in a cycle or circular path from the fountainhead. So it must return and then it will begin again. Yeah, even unto eternity and beyond. I will more fully explain this, inasmuch as an explanation will clear up some of the mystery which is associated with the coming and going of the plant and animal life on your earth. You must know that as a cycle is a circle, so within the cycle itself are many smaller cycles linked to each other through a certain law of frequency relationship. In your earth life you have found that it is a world of extreme and sharp contrasts. This is because God in his infinite wisdom has so conceived and contrived that you must always, through the power of concept, constantly add to, in a constructive way, all of the infinite things which God is. Thus you will return to the fountainhead where you will again resume another group of dimensions and worlds, and so this process is repeated and repeated. That is why in understanding these things, I am humbly observant of my position in God's creative mind. I have tried humbly, and without personal feelings, to picture to you some of the similarities in your earth life which still link you with some of the lower orders of concept. In your community lives, in your dependence upon each other, I have said that it looks like you are all huddled together for security. In your daily lives, sleep, work and sleep, are interspersed by periods of feeding and caring for your physical bodies. Your cycles and periods of life appear to us, as I have said, like that of a squirrel, which is caged in a circular enclosure, and running around just as you do, in repeating the various cycles of your lives. I do not mean to imply that you are animals, because I understand fully your position in God's creation. Rather, I point out these things to you as a means whereby you can begin to further your evolution. As we are close to the subject of the animal kingdom, let us go a little farther into this subject. You may have wondered, as I have said, at the strange appearance of familiarity of the plant and bird life, as seen in some of the species about you. The Earthman has not learned to the fullest extent that all such things have their own position in the plan of evolution, and when I say evolution, I do not mean the principles which were exploited by a man named Darwin. I am referring to a more advanced spiritual concept. You may have wondered, does an animal or a tree possess a soul? Yes, indeed, they do. They possess souls, but not in the sense of your generally conceived idea of a soul. In the case of man, soul merely means that he is linked up as an individual to the fountainhead. A tree or an animal or any other living, crawling, flying thing on your earth, as in any other material world, is also linked up to the fountainhead, however in an entirely different relationship. It is God's expression of the finite and the infinite. Because an animal dies or a tree is burned or chopped down, it does not mean they cease to exist. They existed before they materialized into your world as idea, form, and structure of the infinite mind. Because a forest burns does not mean that the trees have disappeared. Likewise in all other things, as God creates all things, creation began, but there is no beginning of time, for the creation began in God's mind, and as it was conceived so does he manifest. The disappearance of material or physical forms from your earth does not mean that God has let himself be destroyed. As such physical and material expressions exist in your world, so they must likewise exist in a suitable form in an infinite number of worlds and dimensions. The forest of your world of today may grow as the forest upon another planet in another day. We can assume that each regrowth or reappearance of God, in this form, is also attended by and reflects a higher state of evolution. While this is a highly abstract evaluation, I would like you in the coming days to give it much thought. It will explain to you how plant and bird life can appear in a much more highly developed form of energy in our city. It will also explain what happens to your dear little pets. As you all are, and will ultimately be, the sum and total of God's most divine expression, so will you find, in your future worlds and in the higher astral realms, that your pets have followed you there. They may not be the little flea-bitten dog that was so troubled with distemper, but instead a much more highly evolved image or picture, if I can call it such, of that particular dog. Of course he will be just as real as he was to you on earth, but in God's great understanding, as it is expressed in the law of attraction, if you love your doggy strong enough and he loves you likewise, so shall it be in the future. Each animal, each plant, or tree, starts in its cycle from the cosmic fountainhead, and in this cycle of coming and going it is always the same species as its original creation. It only changes in its frequency relationships, in the various planes or dimensions, or can I say worlds, in which it finds itself. Always remember, however, as I have said, you are the most ultimate and most infinite of all God's creations, and one in which he expresses his fullest measure. Do not misconstrue me, brother, nor the things which may seem to you a bit harsh. Your thought patterns are very adhesive and sometimes a great deal of expression is needed to loosen them. Each and every one of you on your earth plane is a brother and sister to us, and our expression of love to you is far greater than any measure of love which you have yet conceived. So wherever it is in your many evolutions that you wish a helping hand, your Venusian brothers will do their utmost. With our love, may you rest in peace. Malvar.